Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, The Tom Woods Show.
Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Welcome back to The Tom Woods Show. This is episode 2407, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Dr. Miriam Grossman, whom I've tried to get for some time, and this really is my lucky day. She is board certified in psychiatry and in the subspecialty of child and adolescent psychiatry, which is of particular significance these days. And she has been warning about the perils and problems and inanities and irrationalities of gender ideology for a very long time. And I want to talk today about themes that are raised in her brand new book with the brilliant title, Lost in Transnation, A Child Psychiatrist's Guide Out of the Madness. So welcome, Dr. Grossman.
It's great to be with you, Tom. Thanks for having me here.
Let's start with this. I'm a U.S. historian. I have a PhD in history from Columbia, a very establishment institution. But I feel completely on the outs when it comes to like the American Historical Association. It would never even occur to me to attend one of their conferences. It's just a disaster. But yet there is, and I don't care. I let these people all be crazy and have their crazy panels about nonsense. But at the same time, there is something deeply alienating about this, that I am a professional in my field, and yet I have nothing in common with these people. And if anything, they're at war with me. And I think you see where I'm going with this. You are in rather a similar situation. Is this something of long standing? Were they crazy about other things? Or is it just gender ideology made child psychiatry go nuts?
No, unfortunately, it is longstanding, and unfortunately, there are other subjects outside of gender ideology, but I can relate to what you say about your own professional organization. I feel the same way about mine. I first realized that my profession had been captured or hijacked or whatever word you want to use by radical ideologues many years ago when I studied sex education. I was a psychiatrist for students at UCLA. And I noticed that a huge proportion of them had sexually transmitted infections, one abortion or many abortions, so many sexual partners that they couldn't even give me a number. They could only estimate for me how many sexual partners they had had. And I decided to go and investigate, what are these kids being told about sexual health? What does sex education consist of? And I was really quite shocked to discover that sex education was founded by disciples of Alfred Kinsey, who was certainly one of the most prominent sexual deviants of the last century, and that sex education, in a nutshell, is about sexual freedom, sexual experimentation, rejection of Judeo-Christian values. It is not about health whatsoever. And so that was a rude awakening. And as a result of that research, I wrote a book called You're Teaching My Child What? And that just came out in paperback, actually, 2 weeks ago. But that is a book about the lies of sex education. And while I was doing that research, Tom, I discovered what kids were being told about gender. I discovered that kids are being told that humanity is not separated into male and female, that that is an oppressive and false paradigm that has to be resisted. And everything was couched in the language of social radicalism, Marxism, rebellion. We have to fight against, they were telling kids, and still do, the gender binary. In other words, male and female. Now, this has no scientific basis. This has no medical basis. Scientifically, humanity is divided into male and female. And so that's how I discovered that all this was going on. And that was back in 2008. I wrote that book, You're Teaching My Child What? And I included a chapter about gender, and I predicted that what we are telling our kids about being male and female, that it's something that is not related to biology, rather it is based on feelings, and that it can change throughout the lifetime, and that we need to do away with the idea that we are all either male or female in a permanent, that we are permanently male or female. It's when I discovered that I warned parents that a disaster is coming. This is going to be disastrous for our kids. Now, unfortunately, it took our current calamity that we are now seeing to prove that I was right. It is a catastrophe to tell kids, to tell little children, preschoolers, that adults make mistakes, that male and female, boy and girl, is randomly assigned, quote unquote, by a doctor or nurse in the delivery room, that sometimes the grown-ups are wrong, that only they know if they feel like they are male or female. And when they announce their identity, the whole world is obligated to go along with it. And those people who do not go along with it, who may question it, are transphobes, bad people, toxic people.
I've said from the start that what's being demanded of us in the name of this ideology is the total transformation of society. And you would think, if we were dealing with people of goodwill, they would say something like this: I realize that we're asking an enormous amount of you. We're asking a tremendous amount. We're asking you to modify language, legal norms that go back thousands of years. We're introducing potential conflict into your own households and all kinds of social turmoil. We realize that this is an enormous imposition, but it must be done for the sake of health and justice. But they can't even be bothered to say that. It's just, yep, we're making radical demands and you're going to sit there and take it.
Yeah, I would say that's accurate. It's imposed on us. I call it a crusade. It's a crusade because, like I mentioned, there's no basis in medicine or science for this. It is more like a religion than anything else. It has its sacred beliefs that cannot be challenged. No debate is permitted. And yeah, it's steamrolling. It's crusading through our culture, through our medical institutions, our medical professional associations, our previously trusted institutions in government, education, to say nothing of the media and Hollywood, obviously.
Now, you've said that there is no scientific basis for this. You will hear some of them say that there is scientific basis, and the way they'll justify that statement is twofold. First, they'll say, the professional associations support us. And there's no denying that. But then you have to go into the corruption of the professional associations. But secondly, I've had it said to me that scientists have identified trans brains, that you can actually look at the brain and see trans identity in there. Is there anything to that?
No, that is not correct. There are some very small, poorly designed studies. There is no evidence, certainly not robust evidence of any sort, that that is the case. Now, I want to also point out to your audience, and I explain this in the book at length, there are different populations of people that suffer from what we call gender dysphoria, which is the intense discomfort with one-sexed bodies. There are different populations. It's very important to recognize that. That is not recognized out there. The proponents of this do not recognize that, for example, 20 years ago, we had two very, very small populations. I'm talking about one in tens of thousands of people. And those populations were basically young boys who, in preschool, as early as preschool, elementary school, years before adolescence and puberty, would insist that they either are or want very much to be the opposite sex. And these are the kids similar to, if you've heard of Jazz Jennings, who from a very early age was expressing discomfort with his body. Those kids are extremely rare. And we know that a majority of them, if they are allowed to go through puberty without interruption, without medicalization, a vast majority of them, in some studies, over 90% of them, will get over their gender dysphoria. They will be comfortable with their bodies. Many of them are gay or lesbian. They are comfortable with their bodies if they are left alone. The other population that we always knew about was the group of middle-aged heterosexual men that are sexually stimulated by cross-dressing, and they reach a certain age, many of them after having families like Admiral Dr. Levine, and they decide that they would like to live the rest of their lives as women. That is the other population that we know about. But now, Tom, for the past 5 to 8 years, 10 years, we're dealing with a totally new demographic. And that is the demographic of teenage girls, mostly girls, not all of them by any stretch, but over 50% girls, who, without any previous discomfort with their bodies, suddenly out of the blue, as described by their parents, decide that they are no longer boys or girls. They are something else. And this is a new population. We do not have any long-term studies because they're new. And so we don't know what they're going to look like 10 years from now and 20 years from now. And the problem is, Tom, that in this country and in Canada, the gender medical establishment claims that the only approach for these kids is to affirm them at once, to affirm their new identity, their delusional identities. I'm going to call it a delusion. And furthermore, to provide them with medical and surgical interventions that are going to have disfiguring results, long-term medical problems, and in some cases, sexual dysfunction and sterility. Very, very serious consequences. So instead of letting these kids go through normal puberty and giving them the psychological support that they need. Now, mind you, these kids, they are completely healthy physically. There is no abnormality of their brains, their reproductive systems, their genitalia. We're not talking about intersex. That's a whole other subject. We're talking about the vast majority of kids that are presenting now, the thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of kids that are coming out announcing that they are no longer, they are not boys, they are not girls. They want to be called a different name, different pronouns, and in many instances, they want to be placed on medical interventions. We have a very dire situation here.
I think the impression that some people who are concerned about this issue have is that if a child announces, I think I'm really a boy, or I want to become a boy, or vice versa, that if this child goes to, let's say, the school guidance counselor or to a therapist, that the child would be instantly affirmed in this idea. But would you say that there are at least some therapists out there who would first, at least, even if they're sympathetic to the trans movement, want to make sure that the child isn't just going through the kind of phase every child goes through in one way or another? Every kid goes through some kind of a phase. Or is there a rush to affirm them, quote unquote?
The professional organizations, take for example, my organization. I'm not a member, but it would be my professional organization, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. They tell me that if a patient comes to me, no matter what age, claiming to be something other than their biology, I am to at once affirm that. I'm to use the new name and pronouns that they request, and I am to advise the parents to do the same thing. So, yes, that is the professional organizations. Now, your question is, are there therapists that do not do that? Are there therapists that are going to, you know, be rational and based in reality and cautious about a developing child's brain and body and the way that they're thinking? Of course, there are some of us. There are some of us, but we are certainly a small minority.
And so how do we find you? I mean, one of the great things about your book is that it's not just theory. you have toward the end of the appendices very practical advice for people, including Correct. This therapist question. I mean, not everybody can go to Miriam Grossman, though. So what do you do in this situation?
Okay, so you're right. I wrote the book as a practical guide for parents, not only parents who might have a child going through this now, but also parents who need to be prepared for the future and need to inoculate their young children, well, children of any age, but particularly young children, so that when they hear these ideas, they can immediately identify them as false. So to answer your question, you know, of course I want people to read the book, Lost in Transnation. I put my heart and soul into it because I've just seen too much suffering around this issue. But regardless of whether you buy it or not, you can go to my website, miriamgrossmanmd.com, and you can go to the resource tab. And I have a huge amount of information there, including tips on finding a therapist. So there certainly are organizations now, a few organizations that provide lists of therapists that are not affirming. They're called gender exploratory or gender critical. They are therapists that have the wisdom and the courage to say, okay, wait a minute. These are children. They are not adults. Children do not have the capacity to fully understand these issues. We have to look into whether the child has comorbid conditions, which most of them do, meaning are they on the autism spectrum? Are they anxious? Are they depressed? Do they have family issues? Have they gone through trauma? The new identity is often a solution to their emotional problems. Well, actually, I shouldn't put it that way. They think it's going to be a solution. They're told by guidance counselors and by teachers and by groomers on the internet, they're told that if you suffer from anxiety, if you're depressed, if you don't fit in at school, if you're having a hard time getting through your day and so on, well, you know, you might be transgender. You may have been born in the wrong body, another idea with no medical basis. Kids are advised, why don't you try it out? Try and see what it feels like, you know, to use a boy's name and pronouns. And you see, what happens is that when these kids are sucked into this way of thinking, they are indoctrinated to believe that anybody that urges caution or has questions, such as their parents, or in the case of myself, when I see kids in my office, they believe that anyone that's going to question these beliefs are bad people, are people that are toxic. So you see, it's a very delicate tightrope. It's very difficult once your child is brought into this belief system. That's why it's better, of course, to have a plan beforehand, not to be ambushed. I want parents to understand that this is like a minefield out there. There are so many people that are waiting eagerly to influence your child and to recruit them into this belief system. And if you don't believe me, go on to Libs of TikTok and you can see all the teachers and guidance counselors and others that spend their days with your children, and they are eagerly promoting this ideology. So you have to reach your child first.
I mean, obviously, anybody who's in this situation or who is interested in the topic, and I honestly think this is the most important thing there is right now, should read your book. But in an abbreviated fashion, let's try to think about what a parent who is suddenly faced with a child presenting with this issue, what should the first steps be? How should the parent respond? I mean, it might be tempting to be over the top hysterical or something, and or to repeat talking points from Fox News or something. What should they do?
Great question. And I'm asked this very often. That's why I put in the book a sample conversation, the first conversation that you have if your child comes out with this new identity. Or even if your child doesn't come out with the identity, there's so much good information there about how to talk to your child about this topic. But yeah, let's say suddenly out of the blue, you never expected it, your son or your daughter comes to you and announces a new identity. I would say, first and foremost, instead of reacting by freaking out, you react with curiosity. Try to stay calm. Try to just get more information from your child. What do you mean by that? Could you please explain what you mean? I really want to find out more about this. I can see that it's super important to you. Whatever is important to you is important to me. I am going to become an expert in this field. I'm not an expert right now. I'm just hearing about it for the first time. Well, I've heard about it, of course, elsewhere, but I'm just hearing about it now from you for the first time. I'm going to do my homework, and we're going to be talking a lot about this. For the time being, I want to help you. I understand that you might be upset or you might be anxious. I want to be there for you. However, I will not at this time agree to a new name or pronouns. I will not be taking you to a clinic. I have to do a lot more research. So it's best in the beginning, you're not going to be saying no over my dead body. You're going to be saying, wow, this is a big topic. I'm so glad that you came to me. I love you. I want to help you. I see and understand that you're emotional about this. You do not, parents, you see, emotions are never wrong. So you can affirm your child's emotions and you can say, I see that you're upset and I see that you feel strongly about that. What you don't want to affirm is the ideas. They're two separate things. Ideas can be right or wrong, can be based in reality or not. Feelings are legitimate. So you certainly don't want to say to your child, oh, this is stupid, or this doesn't make any sense to me. The way that you're feeling doesn't make any sense, and just you need to forget about it. You know, we're not talking about this in this house. That's not at all what you want. You want to be a person that your child is going to turn to. They want your approval. Trust me. Adolescents, young adults, and even adults, we want our parents' approval. But adolescents and children, very, very much so. You might never guess that that's the case from the way that they behave and treat you. But trust me, they want your approval very, very much. And they're anxious about this conversation. They've probably been planning it for some time. They may have talked to their friends or to their online contacts about this first conversation. They may have been given a script. Parents will say that when their child made the announcement, it didn't sound like them speaking. It sounded like something they read somewhere or they heard somewhere. So your child, as confident as they may seem, and as convinced as they may seem about this issue, trust me, they are not confident. Internally, they still have questions and they still have doubts. And they need you to be next to them, not necessarily agreeing with the ideas, agreeing with the new identity, but next to them because they're going through a hard time.
All right. Well, that seems very wise. Let's think about the nightmare scenario in which the issue splits the household down the middle and mom and dad don't agree. And perhaps even it leads to a dissolution of that relationship, or maybe mom and dad weren't together at the time and one takes one side, one takes the other. Now, obviously, if there's a custody situation, that's more complicated than if it's both parents under one roof with two different opinions. But still, it's a tragedy either way. And suppose you are the parent who says, you know, in your heart of hearts, you're saying over my dead body, what can you do?
Well,
and I don't expect miracles from you because some situations have no easy answer.
What you're mentioning now, Tom, is one of the reasons why I call this belief system so destructive. It does destroy marriages. I have seen that occur. It's usually the dads that won't go with it and the moms that are promoting it. Not always, but usually. And I have been involved in court cases involving not necessarily custody, but, you know, when ex-spouses disagree about this issue and whether, you know, what the approach should be with the child. So it's a very delicate tightrope because the parent who is living in reality and wants the child to stay in reality and to avoid medical harms is in such an impossible position. They want to maintain the relationship with their child, whom they love deeply, but they will not collaborate with this. And then there's the other parent that's might be gung-ho, and the child is going to want to probably live with that parent. And what can I tell you? It's heartbreaking. A lot of judges and lawyers have been trained to believe that it is abusive for parents to not go with the narrative, to not provide their child with the medical interventions, that it's medical negligence. There are families that have had their children removed by Child Protective Services on that basis. We really have a calamity here in this country and in Canada, and I address all of that in the book. And one of the appendices is specifically on Child Protective Services, as well as schools, and what parents need to know. So I don't know if I'm answering your question adequately. I feel that parents have to be true to themselves, and they have to do what they know is the right thing and the healthy thing for their child. And I want parents to consider that if you do go along with affirming, quote unquote, the new identity of your child, and you go along with signing on the dotted line for them to receive puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and maybe surgeries, you have to consider that in 5 or 10 years, your child might return to you and say, "Why? Why did you agree to this? I was a child. I had emotional issues. Why did you agree to this?"
And those people, people who've been traumatized by being so affirmed, I think will be some of the most important voices in terms of navigating us out of this, because they have a credibility that nobody else will have, having gone through it themselves.
Now, you're talking about the detransitioners, which are the people, the young people who have gone through, again, we're not talking about those kids, you know, from a very, very, the Jazz Jennings kids, although it could happen to them as well. We're not talking about the middle-aged men. We're talking about kids who have what's called rapid onset gender dysphoria, ROGD. You can learn all about it in my book on my website. And this is the new gender dysphoria that we only have recognized in the past 5 to 8 years. This is the social contagion that spreads among friend groups. Very important for parents to understand this. Wait, what did you just ask me?
Well, I was simply saying that I think, I'm trying to think of how society ever makes a U-turn.
The detransitioners. Very, very important. And there's so many of them out there. And it's not difficult to find them, to read their Substacks, to hear what they have to say. You can also find them on the resource page that I have on my website. But what I want parents to understand is that these detransitioners, you would think that organizations like the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Psychological Association, all of these captured professional organizations, you would think they would just be giving these people the microphone. I mean, if you were a surgeon and you performed, I don't know, hip replacement surgery, and there was this whole population of individuals who were stepping up and saying, "No, this didn't work for me. This caused me a lot of pain and anguish, and I regret going through it." I mean, if there was a significant amount of those individuals, would you not want to sit down and hear what they had to say? Would you not invite some of them, perhaps, to your annual meetings where thousands and thousands of doctors gather to talk about these issues? Well, of course, that's what medicine is supposed to be about. We want to learn from our patients if we're doing something wrong. If we have a new procedure or a new medication, and we think that it's the answer to our patient's issues, and then it turns out that there's a large population that are coming back and they regret taking the medication or having the surgery. But I can tell you that the professional organizations are not giving voice to these kids. I call them kids. I mean, they're young adults. They're in their 20s, most of them. And instead, what they're doing, Tom, and this is so outrageous. They are saying things like, well, to be transgender is to be on a path that has twists and turns. It's not linear. And those people that regret their transitions and they return to living consistent with their biology, it's just another twist and turn.
Hey, everybody, let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, Persist SEO. If you are getting buried by your competition online, then build your brand, your reputation, and your lead flow with digital marketing by Persist SEO. If you are a small local business trying to compete against large companies in the service industry, then increase your visibility with Persist SEO. What if you have low or no leads coming in on a consistent basis? Well, then website search engine and conversion optimization can help move the needle to a more prosperous business model for you. Are you tired of cold calling and networking, meeting places getting shut down? Use your website as a lead generation engine. Or what if you're not showing up for your services in the search engines? Well, get found with Persist SEO's expert search engine optimization. All you have to do is call 770-580-3736 or visit them at ineedseo.help for a free website audit and consultation. That's 770-580-3736 or ineedseo.help. You mentioned your book from roughly 15 years ago. And 15 years ago, you must have sounded a little bit off your rocker to be warning about this problem, because hardly anybody outside of certain university departments was even familiar with these ideas. And yet, in that short amount of time, we've gone from essentially nobody even knowing about it and everybody taking for granted things that have now been thrown into question. We've gone from that, yes, in just a short 15 years to a situation where it's not inconceivable you could have a child taken from you because you haven't instantly adopted these new revolutionary ideas. I mean, you have to admit, the people pushing this, they are deadly serious. A lot of times people who are on my side of things philosophically, we're great at writing articles and giving speeches, but we're not serious like these people.
This is a crusade, and they are single-minded in their determination to change our culture, change our society, change medicine, the practice of medicine, the practice of psychology. They have overall succeeded in those things. They've succeeded, I'm sad to say. But you see, this is not just coming from a few radicals in the gender studies department at universities. This is now incorporated into our large corporations are going along with this and supporting it. There's tremendous amount of money supporting it. The person you should have, I don't know if you've heard of Jennifer Bilek, B-I-L-E-K. You should have her on, Tom. She is the person who has single-handedly studied the funding, the source of all the massive funding that's gone into all this. And I am not the expert in that. I am the expert in treating and helping the kids and the families and understanding what's happened in our professional organizations, understanding where the, you know, what was ground zero, who was patient number one in terms of gender identity. And that goes all the way back to the 50s and 60s, John Money. You know, I tell that story in great detail in the book. But if you want to talk about how, and you are correct that this has happened with astonishing speed, especially after marriage was redefined, meaning that marriage, the definition of marriage was changed in 2015 to include two men and two women. And it was after that that organizations, powerful organizations like the Human Rights Campaign, completely switched their focus, their lobbying focus, away from marriage equality, quote unquote, to transgenderism.
Well, I would like to ask you something that would involve removing your child psychiatrist hat, removing your professional involvement in this issue, and just ask you a question as another human being who, even outside of her professional work, no doubt gives a lot of thought to this issue. And the question is, yes, I'm sure no doubt there's money in it. There's money in all these sorts of things. But that's not the driving force for a lot of people. Now, they'll claim that the driving force, what motivates us, is we desperately want to help suffering kids. But if that were true, as you say, they would be equally interested in kids for whom this turned out to be very, very dramatically not the right thing. And yet they have no interest in that at all. So they've obviously made up their minds even before looking at the data. So what, in fact, what kind of revolutionary motivation? What is it they want to do to society? What do they dislike about society that they think introducing this gender warfare and gender theory will attack? I mean, maybe I'm loading the question.
Well, they want to completely separate male and female from biology, from our body. We are tethered, we are anchored in our bodies, and they want to disrupt that anchor. Now, what does that mean? That, again, I'm not an expert in this, but there's something called, there's a belief system of transhumanism. So people who believe that we can transcend what we now know of as being human. And these are people such as, Martine Rothblatt. Martine Rothblatt, okay, a very prominent business person, tremendously successful, a transgender identifying individual. And he would like to see us as having an existence separate from our bodies so that we transcend death, we transcend the physical limitations of our bodies. Now, this all sounds kind of weird, but you know, you can Google this person and see that, for example, he has made a robot of his wife. Now, you can see on YouTube an interview where his actual wife sits down and talks to a robot that has been created to not only appear, look like her, but all the information that might exist about his wife online and elsewhere has been downloaded into this robot so that the robot can have conversations in which she has the opinions and beliefs and sounds like this real person. So what they are doing is they believe that it's just a matter of time and advancing our technology further, and we will be able to, you could say, I guess, live forever. We won't be restrained by our physical bodies. Am I making sense?
I've heard of this. I think also it could be, again, it's like with Marxism. I'm sure that some naive people who became Marxists thought that they were doing this because they were going to make the workers materially better off. And no doubt some people thought that. But I am quite sure that other people were not so naive. And what they liked about Marxism was that it destroyed things. It destroyed a society that they hated. And it promised to replace it with a more liberated one. And I think there's an analog here. I'm not saying these people are Marxists per se, but I think there's an analog in, I think we're dealing with people who are profoundly alienated from their society. And even though 2023, we're not exactly living in a conservative society, it's still too conservative for them. And if there's one thing they can't abide, it's in an earlier America. And this takes direct aim at that. It undermines your confidence in everything you thought was stable. And it pulls the rug out from under you. And it throws households, especially traditional conservative households, into turmoil. If I wanted to wreck a society and put my kind of utopia in its place, I would go right to the heart like this. I'd go right into the family.
Yes. Well, of course, it destroys the nuclear family. You see, what I could have mentioned before as well is that it seeks to separate reproduction from sexuality and from male and female. So yes, of course, it is destructive of our humanity, because our humanity, at the core of our humanity, is being male or female and reproducing sexually. So yes, all of that is being attacked. I agree with you. It's an attack on everything that we know and hold dear. And there are people, you see, who their goal is just to push the limit. So they're never satisfied. There always has to be more and more, what I guess they would call change or activism. You know, instead of looking inward and saying the change has to come from me, if I become a better person, the world then becomes a better place. They look outside at the world and they look for things that can, there's always more, there's always pushing the limit. And this is certainly one way to push the limit, isn't it, Tom?
Well, that brings up I think the question I'd like to wrap up on. You know, you're somebody who's obviously very much at odds with this whole ideology, and you're, on top of that, quite outspoken about it. So have you been maligned? I have to know the answer to this, but have you been maligned by other people in your profession?
Well, I'm not digging into to see what people are saying about me. I do get emails, messages on Twitter that are not friendly. They're not from fellow professionals, I don't think. You asked about being maligned in my profession?
I'm just wondering if other people say, she's a disgrace to our field, the science has spoken, everything we're doing is above board.
It's probably said. I don't know about anything having been written. Nothing's been sent to me. I'm sure that it's probably discussed maybe among, but you know, here's the thing. What proponents of this belief system do, like so many on the left, is they just ignore for as long as they can the opposition. They just cancel them. They don't give them a voice. They don't bring them on their shows to talk to. They certainly don't read the books. They just say, oh, she's transphobic.
Yeah. And so almost not a person, not to be acknowledged. But I think it's, by the way, it's good that you're not obsessed with other people's opinions of you, because in this day and age, too many people, especially because of the influence of social media, have become obsessed with how others think of them. And that is the death knell for anybody who is going to have a dissident opinion on anything, because you're going to be profoundly disliked. And you have to just be able to ignore that and just keep your head down and do your work.
Well, you know, I do have on Amazon, I have a few one-star reviews that it's clear that they never read the book.
Of course.
You know, they don't address anything of substance. They just say, this is trash, this is transphobic, this is a hater, don't buy the book. They never come back to me with a real argument.
But of course, when an informed person is looking at that page, no informed person looks at that one-star review and thinks, oh, I won't buy this book. It gives the book a kind of legitimacy. In fact, I've even heard that the ideal zone where you want to be with a book is preferably somewhere between 4.4 and 4.8 stars, because 5 stars seems suspicious. Nobody's perfect. So the occasional odd one-star review, you know, is unavoidable anyway. And then I turn around and I have an email list. I make email fodder out of it. I respond to the one-star review in my email, and that encourages more people to go buy it. So I, try to make sales on the backs of the one-star reviews. So that's just the kind of guy I am.
Yeah, that's very clever. I'll have to check, go into Amazon and see. I think I'm about 4. I don't know where I am, but I'm certainly not just 5.0.
No. And it would show that you weren't doing good work if you hadn't enraged at least somebody. So I do want to highly recommend your book, of course. And again, not just for people who are parents of children, but all of us as citizens have an interest in this issue and the policies that are being devised around it. So I strongly recommend Lost in Transnation, a child psychiatrist guide out of the madness. I'll have it linked in the description of this video, also on the show notes page, which is tomwoods.com /2407. Well, Dr. Grossman, thanks so much for your time and for your indispensable book.
Well, thank you. And if I just may say before we finish that the book is not written for professionals, PhD. You don't need a PhD to read this book. It is written for everyday moms and dads so that they can protect their families.
Yes, absolutely. I can attest to that, having read it myself. So again, go pick it up. I've got the link right there. And thank you once again to Dr. Grossman. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Tom.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.